everything was great. Bought a house, getting married, you know, going to build a family. But there was a really dark side that still no one saw. You know you have a problem when it physically affects your body.
What do you feel was missing in your life at that point in order for you to gamble the way you was doing it?
A sense of clarity and sense of purpose, calmness, peace. And I could only find that through one way, which is trying to take my life.
So welcome back to the Next Level Podcast. On today's episode, we have a very good friend of mine, Haj Ghali. He's an international award-winning public speaker, and he's an entrepreneur himself. He's built and helped build other businesses to around 6, 7, and 8 figures. What I want to be discussing on today's podcast is how Haj has recovered from a horrendous gambling addiction and a suicide attempt. Now, I'm not going to say too much right now. I'm going to let Haj do all the talking. Haj, welcome to the show. But yeah, just take me back to your childhood. What was it like growing up in Slough?
So, growing up in Slough, have you ever been there before?
Yeah, I've been to Slough. Yeah.
Right. So, a lot of people cuss it, but I actually love it. And the reason why I love it is because growing up, I've always grown up around black people, white people, Indians. Even Indians as a race, you've got the Hindus, you've got the Sikhs, you've got the Muslims, even the South Indians. So, I just love growing up in that whole multicultural background. So for me, I've got 3 brothers, 2 older, 1 younger. My dad and mum were always present in my life, still are. However, growing up, it wasn't so much my parents that were pushy, it was society. So I would see my cousins or I'd see people from the Sikh faith and the community all doing well. And for them doing well from a young age is always go to school, make sure you get an education. Because if you don't have education, man, you'll just lose your way in life and you won't make money and you'll be a failure. And that's what life was me, sort of really instilled into me. Mm. Problem though, is that whilst I was feeling this, like I need to push myself, I really actually wasn't into studying. You know, I was always up, going out, playing. You know, back in the days, you could literally go out the whole day and it's like 9 o'clock in the evening and it's still light. And then your mum's like, oi, get back in. So we always had this free rein. And the reason why we had free rein is because we never really had parental figures in the house. So what I mean by that is growing up, as young as I can recall, you know, looking at, say, 6, 7. So my dad would go to work in the morning. He used to work in Heathrow. He would go out the whole day, come back home roughly about 5, 5:30, and he'll be paralytic. I mean, every day was the same. Just drinking. Now, I remember times where I would just get home and he's just lying on the floor between the kitchen and the living room. Or I'd go upstairs and he's in the bedroom knocked out and there's vomit on the side. And the reason why that hit me so much at the time is because my mum wasn't there. Because she used to work nights in Asda. So she would leave the house, say 5 o'clock, go to work. Dad would be home about 5:30 because he knew, right, wife's going to work, I can just drink, come home, and then just leave it there. And there were times where, you know, when we're kids, man, mm-hmm. we would be naughty, we'd be messing around, which kid doesn't? Mm-hmm. And then he would just beat us, kick the shit out of us, really just force us down really deep paths. And I didn't like it at the time. But that was the norm growing up. And yeah, man, we got 3 kids running in the house, no parent. By the time he's knocked out, what we doing? We're outside watching TV, playing, not educating ourselves, not having structure. And I think I didn't realise what was happening at the time, but that played a big part going forward in my future.
What sort of emotions did you feel at that time? Did you feel lonely, abandoned?
Yeah. As a child, I was always the one that was the jester, the people pleaser, making people laugh. I was always the one, you know, center of attention, at the one in the parties, making sure everyone's good, cracking jokes. And I think that was this need for significance, right? Mm-hmm. Validation, making sure that I'm heard, I'm seen, people like me. And when you're, even with the brothers, there's always that conflict of fighting for our mother's love. And, you know, even my mum, she couldn't bear like having, even though she would do her very best, she's also a mother too, so she needs her rest. So we would always find ourselves at my grandma's house on the weekends, and she couldn't tame us, you know. With all the love and support she gives, she would do everything, but I always felt a sense of security around her. Mm. Something that I never had, not even in my own household, even with my mother.
She was fighting for the affection.
Yeah, between three brothers, yeah, 100%. And also friends,
yeah,
family. And you don't realize at the moment until you look back on it, but you're always fighting for, you're competitive with each other, if I'm honest with you. Yeah. You always want to do one up on the other. And once that played a massive downfall going forth as well. Because when you see your mother giving a bit more love to the other brother, you're like, what's going on, man? Like, I'm here. Can't you show me that affection? And that's when my way of kicking up then was maybe breaking a window or doing something funny or just cracking a joke. Just anything just to deflect that love or attention back to myself.
And obviously we're going to touch on what's happened. Obviously the reason you're here today to share your experiences is going to jump about. But tell me what happened next.
So I did. So like I said, I got my education, went to school, went to college, went to university. I did the typical Indian degree. So if you're watching this and you're an Indian, if you're not doing doctor, dentistry, medicine, law, physics, economics, any one of those degrees, you're a failure. That's what it was. I mean, honestly, for my sins, I actually did go to university. I did do law. I passed. About 5-6 months into that profession, I was like, this ain't me. Mm. You know when something's in your core and you're like, yeah, this ain't me. When you're around people and you're like, they're drinking all the time, they're going out all the time, and there's that element of just something's not right. So I realized it wasn't right for me. I went back home and I was like, tore up my degree and said, this ain't for me. You can imagine my parents' face, right? You've done all that work, got a law degree. This is setting yourself up, you know, bar whatever happened, you're on a good track. See, my good track, what I was always sort of framed as, get married, get a house, 2 to 3 children, drive a nice car, go on holidays, 40, 50 grand a year, that's it, made it. That's all I've ever known. But the reason why I realized I was into something else is because in second university, I got my student loan. And back then it was much cheaper. But I got my student loan, it came through and I blew it within a couple of days.
Club deal?
No, that came after.
Okay.
So when I was in university, so when I blew my money, I was like, oh shit, I can't go back home to my parents because they're going to kick the crap out of me. Remember, we're not rich. We ain't poor. Yeah. We're just middle class, below middle class, making ends meet. So if I go back to my parents and say to them, I'll just rinse all that money, I'm going to get a good hiding. Yeah. So I remember reading about this child. There was like $1 million homepage back then. And I read about this 15, 16-year-old kid that managed to get a black card. So how do you do that? And I read about, you know, back then it was click ad banners and stuff like that. So my auntie had a property firm in Birmingham because that's where I was studying. So I said, I've got this idea. Let me try it out. I said, for every 1,000 clicks or every XO clicks, I just get paid. And it's basically advertising for you. Back then, you know, Web 2.0 is just fairly new to people. And then what happened is I was making anything from 50, 150. I think the most I ever made in 1 week was about 250, 300, which is not bad when you're in university.
No, not at all, mate.
Pays for the KFC, pays for going out, pays for the beers. So that's when I sort of gone to entrepreneurship. I've always thought I've always been a hustle and bustler, you know, selling, I'm not sure if you remember, Games Master.
Yeah.
So back then we had VHS. Yeah. So I'd record all the little cheats on VHS and I'd sell these little videos to mates in school. And they were like a quid, right? So I've always had that little hustle and bustle, but I never knew what for. And I just went back into what I was good at, which is marketing, web, you know, technology. So I started almost like a Facebook alternative, which is called Club Gel. So that's what you're talking about. And ultimately it was just like a Facebook. Within 2 years of setting that up, we grew that to 165,000 members. And then we went for a meeting with a big company. And we said, look, why don't you advertise on here? You're posting jobs for grads, perfect opportunity here, they're all sat. So what went from meeting as advertising ended up talking about buying the company. Now, it wasn't millions, but it was in the six figures. And what did I say before? I was like, for me, 40, 50 grand a year, and also hearing the sum they're looking to pay, man, no one have I ever met in my family or my circle of friends, even relatives, has ever had that amount of money. So for me, I'm like, I'm done, man. This is it. I've made it. I'm going to be living my whole lifestyle. I'm just going to retire.
What happened when you got a taste of that high life?
So one night in Birmingham, we went out. So I was just chilling out, living a bachelor lifestyle. Friends go, let's just go out. So we went out to Birmingham. And if you're watching this, Broad Street is a very nice place.
Shell.
So we went out clubbing, went out drinking, went all this sort of stuff, right? And then after that, my mates wanted to carry on. They said, look, let's go to the casino. They carry on drink, you know, they give you drinks, they give you sandwiches. We can carry on the party there, and it's just a good crack. All right, cool, let's go. So went in there, and I remember walking. It was a specific casino, I'm not going to name it, but I walked down the casino steps, and it's just this weird feeling I'd never experienced. I saw people laughing. I could, loads of bright lights. I can hear people just shuffling their cards, the roulette machine. And I just felt this really strange sensation in my body. And so cool, got down. My mates start playing blackjack. I'm watching from the sides. And one of my mates said, oh, why don't you just place a bet? Have fun with us. So, okay, cool. Got my sandwiches, got some drinks, sitting on the blackjack table. Placed my first £10 bet. And within about half an hour, 40 minutes, that £10 went to 60, 70 quid. Wow, free money. So what did I do? My business brain went on. Well, I'm not working. I'm sitting here playing with cards. I put £10 in, get £60 back. That's a good return. So what would happen after that is I went to a casino a couple of more times and I'd always come back with a win. And then the bets got a little bit bigger. So it was like rather than 10 quid, it was like 20 quid, 30 quid. And my lucky streak lasted for about 3 months, which is, lucky streaks is only like either first time or second time, right? Mm. This time it was 3 months and I made a bit of money that time. Wow, cool. So I started looking at these online gamblers, these poker players and stuff like that. So then what happened is I was still going to casinos, but then I would start going from blackjack to roulette. Sometimes I had like poker nights. Mm-hmm. So I was just playing around. After the whole sort of lucky streak went, everything went downhill. Because what happened was I started losing money. So I'd go into a casino, bet 100 quid, lose 100 quid, then put another 100 quid in, lose 200 quid that night, go back home, come back. And what happened is I found myself, rather than going at nighttime, I saw a pattern, which was I'd go during the day. Okay, because I could spend all day there because I'm doing nothing, right? Then I was going in the morning. Sometimes I wouldn't leave a casino for 2 days because I was chasing the money. And all the money that I'd made from the acquisition of the company, nearly all got gambled away within a year.
How much did you lose?
At that time, over 100 grand.
So, for the people listening, I mean, I know the dates that it was. When did the addiction start for yourself?
So the addiction started in 2009. 2010, I remember waking up in Birmingham, my apartment. I didn't even wake up. I came back home. And it's about 5:30 in the morning. You know, when you've got that sunset just rising. Mm-hmm. So that little sunrise, I was like, sitting there on the edge of my bed going like, what the fuck, man? Have I got to this point? And I was shaking, I was cold, and it was so bad that I'd puked up. I could smell the room as well. I was like, it stinks. And I literally had no money. I was in a minus. And I had no money to pay for the rent, no money to pay for a phone bill, TV, anything. I thought, what am I going to do? So I thought, look, the only thing I can do is go back home. I had no money for the fare. I got on Virgin Atlantic, the Virgin train is. And then I remember getting on the train and hiding in the toilets all the way home. because I was trying to make sure the conductor didn't see me. I got home. I said to my parents, look, I've messed up. And the thing with Indian parents, they didn't really ask why, but I just said, look, I made a few bad decisions, made a few bad investments, and I lost all my money. But I didn't tell them about the gambling. And any mum who loves their son would always be like, okay, cool. And Indian mums are proper, they're like, oh, don't worry, beta, calm, it's okay, stay home, I'll look after you, you have something to eat, you look, and because I'd lost so much money, I'd lost weight as well. And it took a massive impact. And at that moment, I was like, where do I go from here, man? Well, what's the next step? So I was always good in my own abilities. So I thought, just get a job. So I was always good at really getting jobs. So I went into digital marketing. I worked for some big corporates like Sony. I worked for Panasonic, you know, HP. I worked for some really big corporates, even to a point where I worked for the Middletons in their company. And I was there for a couple of years, went on into private jets. You know, I was heading up all the global marketing for one of the biggest private jet brokerages in the world. And even before that, actually, I met my wife in 2012 on a flight back from New York. We got married in 2014. So, yeah, so amongst this whole time of having this great job, having a great career, getting married, everything was great. Bought a house, getting married, you know, going to build a family. But there was a really dark side that still no one saw.
Tell me more about that dark side.
So I still carried on gambling. So I used the funds that I was making for in my job, the salary, to fuel it. That's all it was. So rather than thinking, oh, I can change myself and I'm in a good job and I've now had, remember going back home, I've got a point in my life where I can change stuff. My brain kept looking at that chase. I still wanted that rush. I still wanted that chase of winning, trying to be, you know, trying to better myself. So for me, just having that salary and that monthly pay was just to keep fueling. So I stopped, kept playing. And even before my wife, I was still doing it. Met my wife, you know, still doing it. Got married, still doing it. You know, even to the point of understanding that we're going to have our first child, kept doing it. And the reason why I said it was so dark is because the thing with gambling addiction, it's one of the fastest growing addictions in the UK and worldwide now. And they're calling it the silent killer, the hidden addiction. And the reason why, so okay, so when you see someone that's on drugs or someone that's an alcoholic, you can physically see that they're drunk or they're inebriated somehow, right? With gambling, it's totally different. It's more of like they have outbursts, they have massive headaches, and you can hide that behind work, can't you? You can say, well, work's really stressful. I can't do this and there's this and I can't take the pressures. So my boss, okay, I understand that. Why? Because people have been to that level, right? Mm-hmm. And man, if I'm being honest with you, I was gambling on the way to work, at work, in the toilets, on the way back home, while my wife's sitting there, even while she's asleep in bed. I think gambling must have consumed, I must have been getting about 4 hours of sleep at that time.
What do you feel was missing in your life at that point in order for you to gamble the way you was doing it?
A sense of clarity and sense of purpose. Because I didn't really know what I was trying to do. I didn't have understanding where I was trying to get to. Because looking back now, I've adopted other beliefs from other people. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. Why not doing this? Why not on this level? What about me? So I never stopped to ask the question to myself, what does Harj want? So amongst this whole madness of, so people think, well, that's, well, what are you complaining about? Because I've put so much pressure on myself to live this life, I actually wanted to run away from it. So gambling for me was a place of actually safety. Yeah. And as toxic as it was, I felt comfortable there. Mm. That's all I've ever known. And I could be in a room, I could be speaking to people, and my mind is like, I just want to be gambling.
And I suppose when you was in the casino, you had the look at me moment. I'm winning, or even if I'm losing, I'm still chasing.
Mm.
And people can, you've got this sense of validation.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad that you touched on that, because you're right. Because when you're meeting people in the casinos or people in the bookies, where you've got more physical interaction.
Exactly.
So when you're seeing them win, you're actually validating them and they validate you.
Yeah.
And because they're in that environment, they sort of know what you've been through or are going through.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that that win that you've had has mostly come off the back of a streak of bad bets.
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, you're right. And it was validation and a sense of, actually, maybe this is where I should be, because people actually understand me.
So obviously that wasn't all what you lost as well, was it?
No.
You lost a significant amount of money.
Yeah. So coming on to that, really, is talking about my wife, because gambling, and, you know, just not going out, you know, not booking holidays. You're, as the other person in your relationship, you're constantly asking yourself, why are we not going out? Why are we not doing this? Why are we not spending money and living a good life? We built this life. It's because as a man of the household, what would happen is I'll pay the bills and the electricity and everything else, make sure that's all covered. But everything else, no, I'm gambling that way. I had no money to spend on that. So I was putting stuff on credit cards and bits and bobs. So it was the 16th of June 2020 where her suspicions came to reality. And I remember we've just gone into a pandemic. And do you remember how much the weather was just brilliant back then?
Mm-hmm.
It's about 8 o'clock in the morning. I came out of the shower. And at this time, I've got a two-year-old son as well, Jeevan. And he was playing in his room. And I remember just feeling great. Walking in, feeling the heat. And I walked into my bedroom. And for some reason, it felt not so nice. But once again, I saw my wife sitting on the bed, crying. And I've never seen her cry like this before, if I'm honest with you. I've always seen her, you know, either have a bit of tears because something's upset her, but not to a point where you know when you get that deep feeling inside your gut that something is massively wrong here. And I remember her looking up to me in the eyes, and I knew something that I had done was wrong. And because I've told so many lies, I don't know what it was. And then my heart dropped to my stomach, just like that, because she was holding my phone in her hand. And I don't know if you've been in that position where, you know, like you've been caught out for doing something that you know you shouldn't be doing, but then you don't know what it is that they found out.
Mm-hmm.
And then she showed me the phone. And that's when she showed me all the gambling transactions. If I'm honest with you, as a man, my pride was hurting a little bit. And I was trying to think, how do I cover this up? I could have lied and said, look, I've gambled a little bit through the pandemic. I was worried about our finances. And someone at work told me I could bet on a few things. So I messed up a little bit. But this weird sense of tell the truth came into me. And spiritual, whether you're biblical, spiritual or not, there's a saying, right? If you speak your truth, it shall set you free. So I decided to speak my truth and really tell her. Now, can you just put yourself in my wife's shoe just for a second? How do you think she felt in that moment?
She's going to kick you out.
Yeah. But the biggest thing before even kicking out was I've broken the very fundamental thing that all relationships are built on.
Trust.
Trust. And watching someone that had been there with me through thick and thin, that had helped me navigate even some of the darkest times, but not knowing why, helping me through family, giving me love, giving me support, giving me an environment where I've never experienced growing up.
Mm.
For so long, I was trying to chase the jackpot, not realizing the jackpot sat in front of me. And I felt like a fucking dick in that moment. You know when you just feel like an absolute failure? I'm not sure if you have, but you question why. And you're right. Stuff, we're done. Like, get your shit, go. I can't see how we can rebuild this. And she'd left the room. I'm thinking, for ages, how do I make this right? How do I make this right? How do I make this right? Because even though I felt free because I told my truth, in comes a wave of guilt. And as a man, what do we want to do? Fix something, make it right. So that was happening. I was like, how do I make it right? How can I make a better life? I've messed up. Do I have an opportunity to have another chance? And I remember begging and pleading with my missus for ages, trying to like just get her to reason with me. And I remember chasing around the house, listen. And it took, you know, a few hours, even for her just to settle. And we had to give each other space that time. People come into your life for certain reasons. And she told her parents, and her dad said to her, do not leave him because something is wrong. Help him. She didn't tell me that until, I would say, about a year after coming out of my addiction. And if it wasn't for him, I actually love my father-in-law a lot. He basically gave her strength to give me strength. She came back to me and said, right, we're going to make this work. Because what I didn't tell you was that we just found out that we've got a second child on the way. Mm-hmm. So for us to make this work, you're going to need to get professional help.
You got emotional there.
Yeah.
Why?
If I'm honest with you, man, as men, we don't consider our actions and the consequences that it has on the people around us. We get so consumed in our own bullshit because we think it's right. But we also have to understand people are dependent on us. So when we use and abuse the very people that love us the most, it questions your own integrity. It questions your own values. And for me, I wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm a very giving person, but I wasn't giving anything back to my family.
Not at that particular moment, but I think what you've touched upon is you didn't necessarily have the tools through growing up, or you didn't know what the correct way in order to do that was.
Yeah.
You probably was being shown how to do that, but didn't want to receive it at that moment in time. You said you went to therapy.
Yeah.
What sort of therapy was it?
So, I want to come back to something you said there, because I think everyone should understand this, is that if you have children or you have people that depend on you, you must show them three things. Self-love, self-care, and self-nurture. If you can at least plant the seeds, which is what I'm doing with my children now, it gives them the tools to help themselves through life. And I didn't understand that. So when I get emotional, it's because for so long I've been trying to validate my love through other people. Mm-hmm. So coming down to that, even just trying to get addiction, you know, even trying to put a grasp on that and even going to therapy, I almost talked myself out of it. So even after all the stuff I've done, and everything I've broken, the trust, the relationship, I'm still questioning, should I get therapy? And it comes down to one thing. My ego was getting in the way of actually receiving the help. And the reason why it's getting in the way is because I was just like, as men, we shouldn't be. We should be manning up. Because for so long, growing up, I was told to get on with it, brush your emotions under the carpet, man up. In Punjabi, we call that banda banja. And it really does. And that's what I've always been told. Which is what I said to you, when we don't learn those three areas, how can we be vulnerable and ask for help? And especially men. Have there been times in your life when you needed help, but your ego got in the way of receiving it?
Yeah, you know, when we first met.
Yeah,
that wasn't necessarily the ego. I wasn't ready to receive at that particular moment in time, but 100% there is. But I would say the issue I think a lot of men have is, and women, but most of the men that come into contact with myself is they're managing the issues. They're not actually dealing with them. And I would imagine that you'd echo that.
You got me emotional, man. I think you just said it there. People are managing the issues without dealing with them.
Mm. How do we change that?
You realise that whatever's holding you back, whether those obstacles, whether those challenges, whether those are fear, you are one conversation, one message, one call from receiving the very thing that you need. And our own brain tells us stories that either are not true or we've listened to other people's stories and have instilled into us. Because most of the stuff that we tell ourselves, it's hard. Well, if it's hard, is it possible it's easy? Mm-hmm. If it's tough, is it possible that there is progress? So if we can just understand, just not just ego, pride, fear, when you can, so our body is very good at giving us signals. You know, our heart has this whole, and I've been sort of delving into this even after going after therapy. Mm-hmm. Our heart has a magnetic field. Our energy is, this is what we all are. Beyond the being, what are we? We are energy. Mm-hmm. So when your energy is vibrating where something not right or something that's great, there are lessons and blessings in it. Ask yourself, what is it? So if you don't understand it, ask someone that is doing it. So for me, forgetting therapy was, right, who do I ask? Who do I get the help and support from? Right, I'm going to go to my parents. No. Yeah. Go to my brothers. No. Go to my friends. No. Shame and guilt. Once again, how do I talk about addictions? Would they understand it? Stigma, taboo, embarrassment, shame. These are all things that, once again, come up. Pride is coming in the way. Who knows? Some of those people might have helped me, even if just by having a conversation, they could say, well, let's sit together and work together to get you the therapy that you need or the treatment that you need. I went back to my local temple and said, look, I need help. I need support. I poured out to them. And with no disrespect to them, they were trying to pour God's words down my throat. I didn't need God at that time because I was very emotional. I needed logic. So I just Googled online, gambling help therapy now. And I remember going to GamCare. GamCare, you know, I just picked up the phone, had a call, and the lady on the other line was like, how can I help you? And I just cried, and I just cried for about 20, 30 minutes on the phone. And that was the only moment I actually felt proud of myself at that time, because I'm now receiving help. It's a very new feeling to me. And I'm thinking, whilst I felt uncomfortable, I actually felt better at the end of it. It's a bit like yourself. We know that it is tough to maybe wake up early, go to the gym and do the very thing that's going to make you feel fitter. Is it hard? Yeah. Is your energy not feeling it? Potentially. Mm-hmm. Is the gym a bit far away? Possibly. Once again, your brain is going to try and keep you safe and secure until you just stay put. But when you push past it, go into the gym and come out the other side, how do you feel?
10 times better.
You feel more energy and energetic, yeah, on the other side.
Yeah.
So by doing the thing that was stopping in the first place, you actually receive more energy.
Yeah.
So after that call, I had this shift moment. I was like, right, cool. I'm going to go into this full-heartedly and give it everything. So that was my step into CBT therapy. And along that, you know, 12 weeks of doing that therapy, I still made a promise to my wife, right? I've got to make this right. So what do I do? Going to try and find jobs. Applying on job sites, getting the CV ready. But what's happening at that time? We're in the middle of a pandemic. And what happened to jobs? What happened to businesses in that time?
All shut down.
Pretty much shut down. Or they put halt on hiring because they were very unsure about what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm in this catch 22. I've promised my wife. I'm feeling guilty. I've promised I'm going to make it right. So what do I do? Well, remember, I started a business. So let me do that. I understand it. I've got an opportunity. And I remember going back to my wife and pitching to her like she's a bloody dragon's den. But she understood.
Yeah.
While she thought it wasn't a great thing to do, but she also understood that actually he's right. If he's going to put his energy into something, at least have this opportunity to make it right. So I did. I started reading books on entrepreneurship. I started Googling stuff. I started, you know, Googling stuff like how to become rich quick.
Yeah.
Which I realized that doesn't happen. YouTubing stuff. I did everything that you could think of. Asking the wrong people, my friends. And what happened is I did find this new energy inside me, which is, right, go out there, started a business. So what was I good at? Marketing. I was good at software. So I'm going to lean in with what I'm good at. And I started a business doing software development and an additional marketing aside. And I'm emailing people, messaging people, contacting people. And everything I'm doing just seems to be falling on deaf ears. So before, when I was gambling, I'm chasing money, right? Now I'm chasing time for money. Oh, shit, I'm going back to my addictive behaviors again. And I'm getting little triggers. But no, I'm focused. I've got therapy. Triggers, remember what you've been taught. Remember the processes, remember the framework. Right, cool. And then everything I kept doing from June, starting the business in 2020, 2-3 months, I just felt like nothing was happening. Until one meeting, I was like, right. You know when you pin your hopes onto this one very thing? I remember practicing the presentation, you know, who's going to be there? Where am I going to be sat? You know when you rehearse?
Mm.
You rehearse, like, cool. On the way to the meeting in Nottingham, I knew, right, I'm going to be saying this, I'm going to be dropping this here. I knew I was going to kill that meeting. Got to the meeting, presented my ass off. Oh, fucking kill that meeting. I knew I did it perfectly. At the end, right, any questions? You know when there's that moment, once again, I talked about energy.
Yeah.
Something is not right here. Then came the response. Hodge, we love everything that you presented.
But,
fuck. Warm sunny day. Now clouds, grey, dark, shivers. What's wrong now? So I thought, okay, let me try and salvage this. We love what you do. We're really working with someone. Maybe we should go back to them. Look at some of the stuff you said. Is there something that they could do? And we go, no, I can do this. And that's why we're sitting here. Obviously, you're not getting it from them. Said, no, we've been working them for a couple of years. Let's see if that works. And then if it doesn't, we can come back to you. And I just gave him a blueprint on how to overcome the problems. So, fuck. Why did I do that? Why? Because I so wanted to please and win that I actually gave him everything.
Mm.
Not knowing I gave him everything. So on the way home, what do I think? How can I show face? And I remember my wife calling me and I literally cancelled all her calls. Oh God, I remember having about 30, 40 missed calls from my wife. Messages, how did it go? What's going on? Why not contacting me? Pick up. I finished that meeting up about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I sat in a Starbucks, just sat there for ages. And I thought, right, I better go home and face the music. And I remember driving back on the M1. It's about 11 o'clock at night. And I'm driving, and everything is coming back to me. All the gambling, all the losses, the failures, the broken trust, everything I've done. And this has been self-perpetuating for a while now. Because knowing you're not getting anywhere in life and you feel like you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. My brain just said to me, after so much, I just felt drained. I just felt I wanted to be alone. I wanted to abandon myself. That people around me that I love are better off without me. Okay. So I took the seatbelt off in my car. Driving on the M1 near Leicester Services. And I'm on the third lane, put my foot down. Just went, cool. Closed my eyes. Car went bang, straight into Central Reserve. I woke up not knowing if I was dead or alive and not caring if I was dead or alive. but I could smell smoke. I was panicked. I could hear someone talking to me. Because in the BMW, you've got the SOS thing, right?
Mm.
Emergency services, do you need any help? So I call everyone. Don't know who the fuck everyone is, but call everyone. Trying to open the door. I was actually trying to start the car, trying to get out of that situation.
Mm.
Thinking I fucked up, I know I fucked up, but I can try. No one's starting. I'm thinking, is this real? And I got out of the car and I remember just stumbling out after knocking the door and I'm alive. I've come out of this accident not knowing what is. I was like confused as fuck. Paramedics came in. I remember the lady, beautiful woman, like nice old lady. She comes up to me, she's like, looking at me, looking at the car, looking at me, looking at the car. She said, look, if you don't believe in any higher power, any God or anything like this, start believing now. Because I walked out of that without any broken bones, without any fractures, only just a couple of scratches on my face. It's not my time. And that was a bit of an awakening for me.
Then the emotions you were feeling at that point. Tell me what was going through your head that led up to that point.
Before
you tried to kill yourself.
Really weird. Just tapping back into that very moment now. Calmness. Just calm. Peace. And I could only find that through one way, which is trying to take my life, if I'm honest with you. The amount of failures I've done in my whole life up until that moment got me in that moment. So remember, it's not just that moment. It was like the little things, the little triggers, carrying on, carrying on, carrying on. And then this is why they say the conversation, the words that we have are very powerful.
Mm.
And it's more the internal self-talk that could be very damaging. And I was self-sabotaging myself in self-talk.
Mm.
You're a fucking failure. You're not worth it. Who the fuck do you think you are? Why do you deserve them? And I was trying to push all those away. That's why I wanted calmness. Mm. That's why I just wanted to be in a state of nowhere. And where is nowhere? I think we know where that is.
Mm. What were some of the triggers that, or the coping mechanisms that you learned from CBT?
Give yourself time. Like whenever you're about to do something where you know it's wrong, try and distract yourself from the very thing. Because
mm-hmm.
if you can give time, it allows you to have a different perspective of things. Reach out to someone. My wife is calling me, right? I didn't speak to her. Had she spoken to me, maybe I'd have a different decision.
Yeah.
So really what I've CBT has taught me is that whilst I've done a lot more work on that, there are external triggers that will cause these issues. And it could be Christmas, you need money. Or you know, there's been a time where you're, once again, in a meeting and haven't made the money. Or something has made you feel bad. And that could be your inner self-talk. So giving yourself time and space and conversation with someone will allow you to maybe have a different thought pattern. This is why a lot of people do a lot of potentially negative things is because they don't speak to someone or give themselves time to just have a different thought.
I agree. And it's how we can create that positive language and that thought process when we're already in a negative flow.
Yeah.
And a negative state. Because there's a lot of, obviously I've experienced addiction, gambling, drugs, alcohol. But when you're in that state of addiction and you haven't got someone like your wife, for me, obviously again, I attempted the same as you. I overdosed, as people know. That was the awakening moment for me. I was just like, boom, they brought me back. So,
yeah.
And I guess the message I'm trying to get across is, at what point do people need to get to rather than taking their own life?
here's how I sort of, when I speak to people now, it's pretty much this. You know you have a problem when it physically affects your body. So when you're gambling in your addiction state, because your mind doesn't know what's right and wrong to a certain extent. It doesn't know what's real and what's made up.
Mm-hmm.
But your body does. That's why it acts in a certain way, right?
Yeah.
So when your body is, for an example, massively being tired, can't wake up, don't want to speak to people, just want to become introverted, you know that's not you. So for me, being a people pleaser to being someone that just wants to hide away from people, there are two different massive disconnects.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when I was gambling, not just the mental, like, you know, the stress, the nervousness, depression, all of these things, these are a side effect of the very thing that you're doing. Also, I was not just, I was physically ill. I wasn't eating properly. I wasn't sleeping properly. My nutrition, I went down to about, I remember at one point, nearly 8.5 kilos.
Fuck.
I was that skinny that I lost that much weight. So you're telling me that's not, something's not right. Something's not right there, right?
Mm.
So you have to just be self-awareness. And I think if you are true to the very essence of who you are and realize that actually what I have come to terms with is, whilst you think your story that you're telling yourself is really bad, there'll be something or someone worse off than you.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
So I thought my stories were bad, and I thought I was in the, my stories were no one could understand. When I started speaking to people, you'll be surprised.
Mm.
Even if you didn't do anything, say if you're struggling with drugs or you're struggling with alcohol or you're struggling with gambling, wherever those problems might be, if you can just sit with someone where they've been through it and just hear them, don't speak, don't do anything, you'll realize that you're not alone.
And for someone that's listening, they've got an addictive personality.
Yeah.
What do we say to that person? Because they're going to go, right, I've relapsed.
Yeah. Understand it's okay to relapse. You're human beings. So one person said to me, Hodge, would you ever gamble again? I said, yeah. Torin, you just said to me you quit gambling, that you'll never gamble. I said, no, I didn't say I'll never gamble. I said, I would never like to gamble. The problem is that if I put so much pressure on myself to say, that's it, I've quit and I'm never going to gamble again, what's the outcome on the other side? It's going to be much worse, isn't it? Because I've put such a high pressure on myself that I've not maintained it. However, what I have been able to do is work on myself. Realize that if you want to quit gambling or you want to quit those things that you want to do, that there is a process between it. And it doesn't happen overnight. Once again, like I said, like the quick rich, get rich quick. It doesn't happen overnight. If we want to have better health, does it happen overnight? No, it takes work. It takes dedication. It takes commitment. Now, the great thing about people with addiction is this, is that they have fantastic habits. They have habits that people would love to have. One, they would do anything to possibly achieve that outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Two, and they're super resourceful on how to achieve the outcome. So for me, for an example, I said, well, what can I put that habit into? So gambling, bad. Let's squash that. Let's try and work on squashing that. Realize that, is there a possibility I could gamble? Yes, but I need to make everything in my life a higher priority so that vibrates on a lower level. But what can I put that habit, what can I put that energy into? So I was like, oh, let's do gardening. I quickly found out that's just putting a plaster on it. Okay, let's try baking. Okay, that's just putting a plaster on it. Let's try other things. I just found they were just putting plasters. They did help for a short amount of time, but I just felt they were plasters. Until I said, well, hold on, I've got this business and I actually love business. The more I think about it, remember I was reading books, I was going on YouTube, I'll dedicate my time to it. But what can I do to help me achieve the outcome in business I'm looking for, which is grow business? So I thought, well, what has addiction taught me? You don't have to do it by yourself. Who's doing the very thing that you're doing and that can help you through the process? So I got mentorship. So it's really, really hard to fathom at the time. So I've wasted a lot of money. Actually, we didn't talk about that, did we?
No, we haven't yet.
So I actually wasted £250,000 on gambling. Now, I'm not sure about you, but losing £250,000 on gambling is a big pill to swallow. Now, for you, it could be 500, it could be 1,000, it could be tens of thousands. That for you might right now be 10 out of 10. But just listen to some stuff that we said. Just realize that there are people out there like yourself, that there are other people out there to help you like yourself. If you're watching this, reach out to me, reach out to Lewis. We can at least hear you and understand where you're coming from without any judgment. Why? Because who are we to judge if we've been through that?
Definitely, definitely. And then also to add on to that, he was nearly £100,000 in debt.
Yeah. So at this moment, even though I'm going through all this craziness, actually it went more than £100,000.
Oh, it did.
Because that was £100,000 at the beginning, right?
At the beginning, yeah.
So over the years, it racked up to about £250,000 in debt. Actually, no, sorry, I lied. I spent £250,000, but I was about £160,000 in debt, round about that.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there going, I need to make this. Well, so I'm sitting in big debt now.
Mm.
So, right, take my habits, let's put into business, get mentorship. Going back to my wife, having the conversation, I know I've wasted £250,000. However, if we invested X amount, I can get the mentorship to help us through this. Once again, I had to change my language. Not just me, help us through this. Are you on board? Because we're a team.
Mm-hmm.
While she doesn't understand it, I still wanted to be part of the process. Because I had to be, one of the biggest ways I built transparency was understanding where the money's going. Because in relationships, there's two reasons why it collapses. Communication and money, and both go hand in hand.
What would you have done if she said no?
Truthfully, I still would have found a way. I still would have found a way. Whether it's me giving something in return, whether it's my time in return, I could have turned around and said, okay, whilst I don't have the money, could I potentially do something for you where it will pay off in the long term?
Because I know there's going to be at least one person, I know they're going to be watching this.
Yeah.
And I want them to do exactly what you've just said.
Yeah. Okay, here's why people find that hard to fathom. Is because we live in a world that's take, 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 take.
Mm-hmm.
I want that. I want it now. Give me it. That's a taking culture. Have you ever thought to just stop and give first? So I had to change my mindset around that. Giving is time, energy, your resources. It doesn't always have to be financial. There's always a transaction to be made somewhere. So I could say, Lewis, because you're flipping great in property, right? Let's be truthful. You are. And you've helped lots of people along the way.
Yeah, I've helped people, yeah.
Yeah. So if I turned around to Lewis and said, Lewis, I really want to get into this property game. I don't have any money. But is there anything that you could at least get me, just give me some teachings? And in that time, here's what I'm great at. I'm great at software. I can help you with websites. I can help you develop apps. Mm-hmm. I can maybe do some of your marketing because I've got a team that can do that. I can help you on that perspective. If you taught me some of these things, what are some of the software stuff that you need help with?
Mm-hmm.
You must say, actually, yeah, I need a new website. This. Okay, cool. I'll take care and show you your website. I'll get that done. Would you mentor me?
Done.
And that's what it takes. But understand, remember, addictive people get resourceful. You don't have to be in an addictive state. Just be in a resourceful state.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need. So it's really clever. People think that they're not. But when they want those new Nikes, or they want that new iPhone, or that new iPad, or that new gadget, or holiday, they get resourceful then, right?
Again, I can resonate because I've been there, and there have been plenty of people that will. When you obviously got the mentorship, how did the your family members as well, how did they react? Did you receive any sort of shit from them?
To be honest with you, I didn't tell them.
You didn't?
No, I just kept it to myself. So, because I didn't want other people to impact my situation at that time.
Mm.
So, which was, my wife knows about it, and that's all that matters. Because she's really going to be the one that's going to help me through the process.
Mm.
So going through the therapy and then going through the whole moment and coming even to the point of trying to take my own life. Imagine my wife this is the thing, our actions have consequences. How do you think my wife felt in that moment? What did she do wrong? Because for her, all she's ever thought that she's helped me. So it's really important that our loved ones understand our points of view. And where does that come from? Communication. And I'll tell you what my really big turning point was, is 2 days after trying to commit suicide, I was in a, it's really weird how this universe works. So remember all those clients I was trying to chase? Mm-hmm. So I had about 2-3 clients come back to me. So saying, Harj, we're in a situation, or can we have a conversation? I was like, what is going on here? It was the 20th of August. I'm like, what is like? And because of what happened and some people trying to reach out to me and wanting my help and asking for money, I felt overwhelmed. I don't understand what's going on. It's almost like my brain is like, you want it, but you don't want it. You want it, but you don't want it. Mm-hmm. And I felt this huge overwhelm. So I just took my son, I said, and Jeevan, I was like, come, let's just get out of the house. So we went for a drive. And as we're driving, my 2-year-old son never asked for anything. We drove past McDonald's and he goes, I want a McDonald's. You never asked for McDonald's. What's going on here? So, all right, cool. Got into McDonald's. I said, what do you want to have? Do you want a Happy Meal? He's like, no, I just want chips. All right, cool. Went to drive through. Yeah, what do you like? Can I just have a small portion of chips? Okay, got to the next aisle. The window, lady hands it over to me. My son sat in the back. I hand over the chips to him. And there's this moment that we had. I hand him a chip, he takes a bite, and he's just like... And then he says this. He's like, Dad, I'm the luckiest boy alive. That moment really taught me 2 things. I was selfish. And there are people that depended on me. I didn't value the word dependency until that moment. So I made a promise to myself, which wasn't just a makeshift promise. It was a promise of necessity, which is, if I never let myself down, I can never let my children down.
I actually had that question for you, is how did you get over that moment? When you took your son through the drive-through, and you the realization of, shit, I've become selfish.
Yeah.
Because you're chasing, you had the addiction.
Yeah.
You've recovered, but now you're chasing money. And all of a sudden, you've got the jackpot sitting in the back seat of your car.
Yeah.
And you've gone, and took a breath. How did you recover from that? Because there's only a few people that I know. I've got to that realization.
Yeah.
There's only a few people that I know that have ever come to that moment in their life and gone, actually, it's not necessarily about the money, although it is necessary.
Yeah.
But the most important thing was sitting in the back seat of your car.
Yeah. And there's a very, okay, this is, I think this should hit you on the head, which is life happens for us, not to us.
Mm.
So when I started understanding my feelings, remember, through therapy, understanding your body and your mind and your heart, actually more so than your mind, your heart will tell you what's right, which is don't let yourself down because your child needs you. And what I realized was the reason why I was selfish, and the word selfish comes into this, is because I was about to check out, leaving them with nothing. And I'm not talking about nothing in terms of monetary, properties, that sort of stuff. I didn't leave the things that are within them.
Yep.
How to survive through life, how to be a father, how to be a communicator, how to build relationships, how to love yourself, how to please, thank you, pardons, values, beliefs. I haven't shown any of this. So who's selfish in that moment? Them or me? Just having a child doesn't mean you're a father. A father is being a leader. And this could be for women, this could be for anyone. A leader is someone that can pull from the front but push from the back. So I realized I was selfish. And that's me being, one, understanding what I'm going through, and also realizing what is this. You have to understand, what was that moment trying to teach me? Whilst I knew something was wrong, it just told me not to let myself down. It was only until a few days after I was like, okay, it's this. Because I had to go back to them and go, what was it trying to teach me? And then once I got the teachings, I found the blessings.
And you've had a lot of them.
Yeah.
You've had a lot of blessings, which obviously we can touch on now. But what I want to touch on now is what's driving you to be better now?
This weekend I was around some people and we are humans, but missing the being. So I'm on this journey of not money, but creating impact. And we spoke about this before. I was able now become a bit spiritual, and I'm learning all about, you know, heart coherences and asking my heart what's right. I managed to have a divine intervention, and what I realized was it's my voice that's my weaponry. So if I look at everything I've done, how I've grown successful businesses, how I've nurtured better relationships with myself, with my partners and my loved ones, my clients, how to have difficult conversations, how to have a conversation and how to be better with finances. I learned it comes down to one thing. It's how to communicate effectively. Now, communication doesn't mean just the words you speak. It's so financials, it's like a relationship. If you use and abuse it, what will money do? It will use you and abuse you back. Mm-hmm. If you can understand money, have a relationship with money, it will respect you even more. Same thing with relationships. Rather than talking to people, have a conversation, understand people's perspective, points of views. You go so much further. Like, you know how many conversations I have with clients just by understanding, not even about business. Usually, if you can understand their model of the world and what's holding them back, which is usually themselves, you've just given them intervention. You've given them a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. But they also feel like they're supported along the journey. So when you're able to do that and tap into the very essence of the being, business follows, relationship follows, finance follows. So for me, I want to show people how to do that.
How can we do that? Well, how do you balance contentment with the ambition that you've got to help the amount of people that you want to help?
Yeah. One, we live in a fantastic world, which is called the digital era.
Mm.
So one thing I've had the privilege of doing is posting stuff online. Mm. Rather than using it as just a social platform, which I do to a certain extent, as liking and commenting on friends' stuff, use it to get your message out there. And it could be something simple as, you know, if you can have, so mastering communication is mastering the art of communication, which is articulating your message. Mm. So here's one profound thing I can give to anyone. You never tell a story without making a point, and you never make a point without telling a story. If you can understand that, changes dynamics. What happens is you're training your brain and your mind and your body to give messages to people. Then you get those times where you're like speaking to someone, you're like, get on with the fucking point. Unfortunately, we live in a world where people are lacking attention.
Mm.
I say they're lacking attention. They can go and binge Netflix, but when something doesn't serve them in the moment, they just want, like, what are you giving me? Remember, like I said before, well, let me give some value first. Let me share some perspectives. If I can get them just to shift their perspective, I'm doing my art as communication. That's all I'm asking. So for me, leverage social media. And you don't have to change the world, but you can change one person at a time. Because you change one person at a time, those people know how many people on average? Say 5 people. Those 5 people know how many people? 5 people. And the ripple effect of having one conversation, and I've seen this since we first met, the amount of conversation I had with people, and sort of 2 years ago, and they said, oh, I remember when you gave me this piece of advice, it's changed so many things in not just my business, but me as a person. I'm like, cool. Well, my purpose has been served. And what would you like to tell someone else? Oh, I'd like to tell them this. Well, who have you told? No one. Well, go on and tell them.
And always sort of follow that up with what for you is a life well lived. I can sort of gauge the answer, but most people talk about business or something financial, but with you, I would anticipate the answer could be slightly different.
In what regards?
Because you've had that divine intervention.
Yeah.
And more, it's based around what you've recently had and recently experienced. And it's, like I said, it's very rare for someone to go through that recent transition.
Yeah, yeah. So I think people have to ask themselves, what do they really want?
And that people don't know.
Yeah. So, but people do know.
Yeah.
The thing is that they just don't. Either they're afraid of hearing the answers, or they don't want to hear the answers.
Mm.
Why? Because if people step away from their current circle of network or current group of people, they are seen as going into cults. What's wrong with you?
Mm.
As opposed to encouragement. Why? I'm speaking from my own journey. When I came out of my addiction, do you know how many people I lost? I lost my brother. To a certain extent, lost. We are now trying to rebuild that relationship. But cousins, friends, family members, and that's okay, because what I've come to terms with is that they never really my people.
The reason I say people don't know is that, for example, go back to when you was you'd come out of the addiction. I'm trying to paint a picture of someone that's just come out of an addiction.
Yeah.
And you were trying to win the wife back.
Yeah.
So that I'm trying to win the wife back, or I'm trying to win whoever it may be back, or I'm trying to get myself back on track.
Yeah.
And they're going around in circles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the point a lot of these people are at now. I'm trying to get more income, trying to get a new job, whatever that might be, but it's not, it's just not the right thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people like that at the minute, but they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But really, if they ask themselves the right question, allow themselves space to think.
Yeah.
Difficult.
Okay, here.
For me, it's not a risk.
Yeah.
Because if you allow yourself enough time and space, you'll get the answer.
Yeah. So, okay, here, let me put it in a different way. Actually, now that you said it, I've got an answer for that. Which is, if you really want to do the very thing that you want to do, whether it's charity work, whether it's helping people, becoming a salesperson, whatever it is, don't think you have to do it in this country. I think people are confined by the environments.
Mm.
Like, look what's happening now. Obviously, I'm not going to, there's cost of living, there's so many things going on.
Mm.
But I'm not sure if you've seen Race Across the World on BBC.
Mm.
I've been watching that recently. I'm like, hold on. There are so many places out there that you can do the very same thing, but just in a different environment. But what stops you? You. So yeah. You are your own limitation. So if you can just say to yourself, like right now, if I said to my missus, right, we're going. And she said, no, I don't want to. What am I doing? I'm holding myself back for who? Her.
Mm-hmm.
However, I understand that there's children, because that's another conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But when you know it's not right for you and you're putting yourself back in a position of someone telling you what to do, then you'll always be chasing your tail. So for me, I've said to my wife this, is that if I've got an idea and it suits where we want to try and get to, let's have a conversation. If it came down to a point where, no, I don't want to do it, but yet deep down in my heart, I don't want to do it, I know it's going to be difficult, but on the other side of it, pain is temporary. Pain only lasts for a little amount of time. I say this to my children, what is pain? They said, it only lasts a little bit. Okay, cool. So if it only lasts a little bit, what happens on the other side? Well, you get better. That's what, and I think people are so afraid to go through that pain because they're so scared of how long it's going to last. But at some point, at any given moment, it will change. Whether it's in a year, a day, or 2 weeks, or 10 years, it will change. And realize that everything that we do, we have to go through the failures first to achieve the outcomes. And the outcomes that come on the other side would surpass all the crap that you've gone through.
Yeah, well, I agree, mate. I agree. And obviously, I know what you've been through.
Yeah.
And obviously today we've touched on a lot of it. What would you say has been the best piece of advice you've ever received?
If you allow it, you enable it.
Powerful. I know that your kids are a huge part of your life. I want you to look down the camera if you can and leave them a message for me and for you.
To Jeevan and Wright, if you ever feel lost in this world, remember the very things that I've taught you, which is what? Be kind, be happy, and help. Because if you can help someone on their journey, it's you putting a down payment forward for receiving the blessings that will come your way. And no matter what, I'll always be there, right here.
Hodge, I really appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you.
Thank you, bro.